Welcome back to Ashburton. We're about ready to start now.
It's political commentary.
Good. Make sure I've got the right microphone on for myself. There we go. Good morning, David Slack. How's it going?
Never better, and thanks for asking, Johnny.
Yeah, never better. Now, we've had some news recently that David Seymour has suggested further privatisation in the New Zealand healthcare system. What is your take on the current debate surrounding privatisation of New Zealand's healthcare system? And do you think the public is in any way ready for such a shift?
I hope it's not ready for it. I suspect it's not. I know it certainly won't be if it gets a reasoned and careful examination of the arguments presented to it. Problem we have here, as we did with the treaty principles, is that Seymour keeps offering falsehoods as fact, and he will stack up a whole argument that sits on top of a false assertion, and so that you get... I wrote about this in my newsletter the other day, and I gave a little example to illustrate it. I said he'll say, for example, 2 + 2 = 4. We all know that's right. And 2 × 2 = 4 too. And we know that's right. So then obviously something plus something is the same as something times something. Mm. So that's how he ends up telling us that 4 × 4 is 8, you know. It's quite frustrating because in the instance of the health argument, what he offered in his speech last week was a little illustration that went like this. He said, healthcare spending has gone from $20 billion to $30 billion in 5 years, and that must be awful, right? And he said, how many people here would give up their right to the public healthcare system if they got $6,000 for their own private insurance? Because what he did was he took that money and he divided it per head across the population and said, that's $6,000 per person we're spending. Well, there are all kinds of things wrong with that argument that on first blush looks like it might actually stand up. And it starts here. When he talks about $20 billion going to $30 billion, it sounds like health care is out of control, right? But if you look at the growth in our population, and if you look at the amount of health spending that was done to catch up on what had been neglected during the previous government, that changes things. We've also had a pandemic. We've also had worldwide inflation following the pandemic. All of that adds up to costs going up and everything. People know this. So the $20 to $30 billion looks a bit less alarming when you factor that in. And then you get on to the second thing to consider, which is this. You know, how much do we spend as a proportion of our GDP? And that has gone from 9% to 11% looking at those figures. Now, let's ask ourselves, if we go around the world to all of the other first world countries and ask what they should spend as a share of GDP, the answer is 9%, 11%. We're absolutely normal in this.
Yeah, completely.
Health is expensive. So that's the first thing. But then the second question to ask is, well, even if we just assume his maths is persuasive, even though we've just proved it's not, is private better? And the question you then have to ask is, well, let's look at the place where private is really given free rein. That is America. In America, they spend 19% of their GDP against the 9 to 11% I just mentioned that everywhere
else has.
Yeah, well, on health care, but that comes through insurance.
Yes.
And so they spend all that extra, but they get a poorer outcome. UK, for example, their cancer survival is just as good as US, even though they're spending 40% less. Medical bills in the US cause 2/3 of bankruptcies. Because if you, God forbid, you're not covered and you get a serious illness or even a relatively run-of-the-mill one, it runs you into tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands. You run through all your savings and you go broke. It's an appalling position to be in. And it happens routinely. Well, like I just said, you know, 2/3 of US bankruptcies.
And
of course, by medical bills, for God's sake. So, sorry, Donnie, get a word in.
I was just thinking, David Seymour's proposal is to allow people to opt out of the public healthcare system. How realistic is it for New Zealand to adopt a model where private insurance could replace public health for some?
Well, it's kind of nutty, because if you look at, for example, how our private schemes work right now, they rely on just working on the very straightforward HIP operations, that kind of thing, where your costs are very predictable and you can level it out across people. Mm. The moment you get into what our public sector takes care of, which is everything else, which includes what happens if you get smashed in, by a car on the road, what happens if you fall off a building, what happens if out of a clear blue sky you find a lump and suddenly you realise you've got a terrible cancer. All of these things, they will take care of you. You walk in, they can't predict who will be walking in. They can only rely on statistics that tell us, you know, last year it was this many and over 10 years it's this many, and they build up a system to anticipate all of that. And then if you have a pandemic, they even have a little flexibility built in there to deal with it. Not as much as they would have if we were funding it more generously, of course. But all of this they achieve the way that the private sector would really struggle to do. And if you know, what David Seymour would argue with you is, well, no, the private sector is way more efficient. But let's go back to America and have a look at things work there, how things work there. On their paperwork, they spend $937 per person on paperwork compared to Canada. Similar system to us, $196. So $937 against $196. At the Mayo Clinic, you've got 20 billing staff supporting each doctor. Now, by comparison, our ACC spends 11 cents of each dollar on admin, while the American insurers spend 20 cents and more of each dollar on the admin. Pharmac has a bargaining power that saves nearly $2 billion a year by negotiating drug prices as one buyer. Now, the private sector would not be able to get that clout. In every sphere that you look at, and though it looks kind of seductive on first principles, the prospect is that it'll cost us more to be looked after less well. And there's a further prospect that if you're not rich, or at least well off, you will be in terrible trouble. And that's where we get to the essence of it, Johnny. It really feels as though, and this goes for, you know, various aspects of ACT policy, there's an absolute impatience and intolerance that says, oh, look, we'll spend a bit of money on you, but if you cost more than that, we'll bugger you, you're too much trouble, you should have sorted your life out. You should have had the wit to have chosen the right genes, chosen the right parents, and chosen to be born in the right place and time. I mean, that is the absolute fallacy of so much ACT thinking that says we expect you to be able to sort yourself out, and if you can't, we're not going to look after you. Well, any decent society understands that people are in different circumstances and come to the party in different ways, and if we're all in it together, we work better together, and we get there together. And it's an absolute fallacy that suits the ACT party to say, no, we're not going to bother with that because we don't want to have to spend time and money on it.
Yes, yeah, you never know what your lot in life is going to be, and you want to, as a civil society, as you say, you want to be able to maximise the minimum that people at, you know, that are really doing it tough are going to receive, and that's what everyone essentially would want, wouldn't they? Now, I guess this all kind of falls into a broader conversation around privatisation. And Prime Minister Christopher Luxon has softened some of his language around privatisation and has stated that privatisation discussions would happen in the long term. Do you think this is a careful approach, or is it a way to avoid a controversial issue during, you know, the lead up to the next election? And the Green Party has called for clarity on whether the Prime Minister intends to privatise public services in the long run. How important is transparency on this issue for New Zealand's political landscape going forward?
Oh, well, that matters. And the more we go along, the more clear it becomes that all these policies that the Luxon's administration are putting together are designed to improve their well-being, their performance in the polls, their numbers that make people think, oh, the economy is doing okay, so we'll support this government. I've never seen such a self-serving set of policies. And the privatisation kind of sort of slots into that, or rather, to answer your question, the way he's treating it, slots into that scenario in the sense that he says, well, yeah, I can see that ACT would like it, and actually I've got various parts of my party kind of like, kind of into it too, but I've got to soft pedal this because it is, we know after 40 years of this that the general public don't have a great appetite for it. You know, the last time this came up in any serious way was with the private selling of various electricity entities. And
that hasn't worked out for anyone, has it? I mean, if we...
Well, it bloody hasn't.
Yeah,
and what's more, when people were given the chance to express their opinion by the ballot box, they said at about a rate of 90%, no, we don't want a bar of it. So that's what they know. That's the headwind they know they're always flying into. And the further question is, you know, is it ever going to be worth it to anybody but a few people, namely ones who get to clip the ticket by handling the very expensive sale process, the ones who get possibly perceive they get themselves a bargain or come in the way that private equity often does and says, right, we'll pay over the odds, but then we're going to get that money back either by cutting the bejesus out of the operation and leaving the consumer the worse off. And 40 years, it is very hard to point to any example of privatisation doing us much good
any
at all.
Good,
we,
yeah.
sold telecom for what ended up looking, you know, at the time it looked like a vast amount of money, $3 billion. But in hindsight, it was sold at a bargain clear out. You know, you are, especially when you get into large entities like the one we began this conversation around, namely health, the more complex it is, the more difficult it is for the private sector to run it well, and the more sense it makes for the government to go on owning it. And if you're a bit short of dough, put up the taxes, bro. That's a much better way to go.
Yeah, right. On that note, David Slack, we'll say thank you very much for your contribution this morning, and we shall catch up in a couple of weeks' time.
Will do. Cheers, Johnny.
All right, cheers, dude. Okay, bye.
You just heard a bit of political commentary.